Hello, everybody. This is Jake Sanzano, host of Jake and Gino Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy. Gino Barber, Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing good, brother. How you doing?
Always making it happen, big man. Today's guest is the founder and managing director of Hookpoint. He has helped the largest brands and celebrities like Taylor Swift and IKEA reverse engineer how to make content go viral. He generated 60 billion views and 100 million followers for the content they have worked on, and most recently authored Hookpoint, How to Stand Out in a 3-Second World. So without further ado, Brennan Kane, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to see you guys again.
Hey, the pleasure is all ours. Now, I got to ask a Taylor Swift question here. So, you know, a lot of stuff going around as we get into this, but what's your opinion? Because I've heard from some publicists that this was like a setup between her and Kelce. So is this, in your opinion, is this a fake setup, a simple business transaction to increase brand value and drive revenues? Or do you think love is in the air? We're real close to Valentine's Day, man. So, you know, is love in the air, or is this simply about the dollars? What do you think?
I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with the money. I mean, first off, Taylor's too authentic for that. Second of off, she generated $1 billion before this stuff happened. So I don't think she really needed it, nor my limited interactions with her. That's just not her brand. Like, that's, she just wouldn't kind of do something like that just for money.
So you're in the same camp with my wife, and I say always follow the money. It's about the money. So we're on different sides of this, but who knows, right? The true answer will maybe never come out. So, you know.
Well, I mean, the NFL and Travis Kelce are getting far more out of it than Taylor. So I don't know that Taylor would kind
of You don't think 45-year-old guys are starting to pick up Taylor Swift albums? No.
I mean, I think that they were already picking up albums because of their daughters. So
fair enough.
I just, because you hear people like Roger Goodell and like other very successful people talking about taking their daughters to see Taylor Swift and being impressed by her and enjoying their music. So I think they were already introduced if they had daughters that listened to her, to her music. But I think if you look at the NFL playoff numbers, I think there was some contributing factor to that playing in of bringing in a new audience to the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So the Swifties are going to be tuning in this week, Gino. That's what he's saying.
I won't be tuning in, but let them tune in. So that's good. Good for them. Brendan, you've got the book, Hookpoint. I think it's a phenomenal book. You know, what made you write the book?
It's interesting. I think that the intention of writing the book is kind of, I had an intention, and I'll explain the intention, but I think it's kind of played into other avenues. But, you know, 1 million followers was purely, 1 million followers was purely a social media book. It's like, you know, if you want to generate followers, you want to maximize social media, you pick up this book. But when I look back on my career of things I did, you know, outside of social media and kind of started my career, forge connections, get projects, you know, because I would have people ask, well, how did you get the opportunity to build digital divisions for movie studios? How did you land like Taylor Swift as a client or MTV or these other people? I had to kind of really reflect on, well, what was the core reason for it? And it was going down to this concept of a hook point. And I just felt that there was a lot of people that I had interacted with over the course of my career. And oftentimes it was the most brilliant people that were so brilliant in what they did is they just didn't really know how to articulate and contextualize their zone of genius to really stand out above the noise. And you see this a lot of on social media where there are content creators that are probably not as experienced or have the level of intelligence as other people, but they were breaking through and gaining more market share and attention because of their ability to really understand this new world that we lived in, the new mediums that we're playing through to stand out and grab attention at the highest levels.
I have a question about that, Gina. I want to dive more into it because I feel like, and I could be way off on this. I want to hear from Brennan on this. Is it due to age and this conditioning of being brought up with these devices? Because I didn't get a device until I was in college. It was a flip phone. you know, never really got big into enjoying social media and used the crap out of it, where these other kids are, this is literally a part of their environment growing up and can become intuitive. So it just becomes this sort of natural talent, you know, that's through almost evolution that they're learning as they grow up. Is that a component? Is that what I'm hearing you say? I just want to be very specific here.
I listen, there's obviously some of the younger generation has done an amazing job because they grew up with these platforms and built massive audiences, but you can see a lot of examples of older individuals using it. For example, one of my partners is a guy named Vishen, who's the founder of a company called Mind Valley, and they're one of the largest online education companies. And he always tells a story that I don't think he started social media until he was like 40. And he was really hesitant to kind of do it because, you know, he didn't really naturally grow up with this and didn't necessarily feel comfortable with it. But then once he kind of got past that threshold, you know, he has really mastered the art. You know, he's got over 1 million followers on Instagram, I think over 2 million followers on Facebook. And
what made him successful?
His storytelling. It's really... everything that we kind of do with our company, and the thing that differentiates us, is we don't really look at social media from a tactic perspective, a hack perspective. You know, there's a lot of information about like what time of day you post, what hashtags you use, the frequency of which you post, which I will say like 10 years ago, when there was less people, less content on the platforms, those things made a difference. But now we're at an inflection point where there's close to 5 billion people on these platforms pushing billions of pieces of content out. It's matured in such a way that really it comes down to who can kind of tell the best story that drives success.
You're saying because talent and quality of content rules the day right now.
Yes. Yeah. And it's very nuanced though, in that when we look at content, we start from the basic level of analyzing formats. And this is where most people don't truly understand social media and get kind of lost in it. They think, I'm just going to post content and something magically is going to happen. When in reality, the people that grow off of social media, and I'm going to push aside like celebrities, like you think about like The Rock, for example, one of the most followed people on Instagram, people think, oh, he grew his audience because he understands social media and, you know, he's really good.
Is he good in your opinion?
He's good at social media. But what I will say is that his following base is driven by external factors, meaning every movie that he's in, they're spending $100 million marketing that movie. You know, he was on the WWE for years, a huge marketing machine. And that's not diluting what he's done. He's done an amazing job. He's good at social media. But we have clients come to us and we say, you know, what channels do you want to emulate? What channels do you want to be like? And they'll say, be like Apple. And it's like Apple invests $1 billion a year in marketing. That's what's driving that audience. So we really look at and study the people that have started on social media. There's no external force or external driver to their audience, and have figured out how to build an audience, connect with people purely through social media. And when you do that research, they are typically mastering a single storytelling format. So what do I mean by a format? Well, first off, most people look at and hear the word trend. They think, go off and try trends and chase the trends. Like if you think way back when the Ice Bucket Challenge, like a trend is fleeting. It lasts for a very short period of time. And the problem with trends is you're jumping from trend to trend to trend without becoming a master storyteller. So if you think about where I started my career is in the film industry. Every movie for the past 80 years plus has followed the same three-act structure in terms of how they tell a movie. It's used for drama, action, sci-fi, horror, any genre you can think of. And a filmmaker like Steven Spielberg, one of the best storytellers of all time, he is not reinventing the three-act structure every time he makes a movie. He's leveraging that three-act structure and becoming better and better and better and better at it. So the same thing applies with social media. However, with social media, there's hundreds of formats out there in the world. So what we say is first understand that there's these clear-cut formats and then become a master of that format. So to give you an example, what is a format? So there is one that a lot of people use on social media called two characters, one light bulb. It's where the person plays the expert and the novice, and they essentially have a conversation with themselves and do a perspective shift on their subject matter. This is used for law. It's used for nutrition, for fitness, all of these different verticals. Now, that's a format. Now, most people, when they see that format, even if they realize it's a format, they'll say, oh, I see what they're doing. They're just having a conversation with themselves. So I'm just going to do that.
But it's two different characters. Like one, like you're saying, one guy's the expert, one guy's the novice or whatever.
And yeah, but it's the same person playing that.
Got it. Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it. Yep.
So most people would say, oh, I see what they're doing. They're playing two characters and having a conversation with ourselves. The problem is 99% of people are going to look at it through that lens and they're going to fail with that format because the performance of that format is not the format itself. It's in the execution of that format. So the way that we look at it is, okay, we see some people generating tens of millions of views of video with this, but we also know some people are generating less than 10,000 views a video with that. So what we do is we have a process called gold, silver, bronze. Well, we'll take a Google spreadsheet. We'll take like five of the high performers. So that format can yield like 10 million views of video. Then we'll look at the average, which is like a million views. And then the underperformers, which is like 10 to 100,000.
But that probably requires someone to be a decent actor to pull that off, though. That's probably why there's that tier. Is that fair to say?
There is. So it's a great question. So again, what we look at is what we call performance drivers. So performance drivers are not the content itself. It's the contextual nature of how you're presenting that content. So those performance drivers can be the performance, the acting part of it, but it could be pacing, tonality, what happens in the first 3 seconds, the hook, the editing, the captions, the title cards. So what we do is when we look at like the high performers versus the underperformers, we're seeing what are these contextual elements that are happening in that high performer that's not happening in the low performer. Because what you can see is, like, for example, somebody that uses that format really well is a lawyer called Erica Kohlberg. She does really well on Instagram and TikTok, millions of followers. Even her, she will have high performers and low performers. So the performance driver in that case is really not going to be her acting ability or performance, even though there's a baseline there. It's going to be these additional elements that cause the difference between a high and low performer. So that's where you've got to really do the analysis to understand what makes the difference, but also be honest with yourself. Is this a format that I think I can pull off? Because not everybody can pull off that type of format. So again, we've done analysis of hundreds of these formats across different platforms and different industries. And we really look at the individual, what are their strengths, what are their weaknesses, what are the resources they have available to them to identify what is the right fit for them.
There's a guy that does for college football, he's a comedian, Josh something, who does a variety of this, where he'll take on these different, you know, characters within it and say different things. It's more comedian, like comedy. He's driving for that, but I think he's done very well with a similar format there. I don't know if you know him or not, but yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's
probably
so many influencers
them, right?
Out there. I mean, literally we have a team of researchers that all they do every day is look for
analyze
new
the stuff.
Formats
yeah.
and analyze it. But I'm sure he's doing well with maybe that format or a variation.
So
of
there's,
it.
So what I'm hearing from you is there's different frameworks of storytelling, and then I'm sure that you chunk it down into frameworks of actually how to tell a story. Am I on the right track here?
Yeah, it's a structure or a format for how you're going to tell a story. Yeah. Like, again, a larger analogy that most people get is, do I want to make a movie? Do I want to make a television show? Do I want to write articles? Do I want to write a book? Those are all different formats.
Mm-hmm.
And within those formats, there's things that allow you to be successful with them or unsuccessful with them. So it's like a filmmaker that does movies doesn't mean they're going to be good at writing a book. Doesn't mean they're going to be good at writing short stories. There is kind of that nuance in the difference between these formats. But the big thing and big takeaway, if there's one takeaway to have from this, is if you want to master social media, is to understand there are formats. And once you understand that and you start consuming content on social media, you'll start seeing it.
Brandon, in the book, The Hook Point, How to Stand Out in 3 Seconds, can you give me and the listeners an idea of what makes a hook point effective? And then I'd like to talk about branding as well, because I think in the book, you really highlighted really well how people confuse branding and hook points and messaging. So let's talk about how to develop that hook point. And while before you do that, I want to push back on Jake for a second, because he's always blaming the younger generation for having, you know, this whole mindset of like they need it instantaneously. And I disagree with that. I think we've always had that. We've always had that. Now social media has just made it a lot easier for us to get that attention real quick. And I think in your book, you really discuss hook points, how they work effectively. And if you can grab that attention, great. Now you've got the attention, but the storytelling comes into play. What do you do with that? So let's start off with what makes a really good hook point.
Well, I think that the first thing is understanding what has been done previously in terms of the message that you're trying to put out in the world, because almost every subject matter has been tackled in social media or another medium. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that you got to understand is you need to break the pattern of how things have been presented prior to you. Because, you know, a hook point is, you know, there's 3 core pillars to a hook point. It's grabbing the attention, which we're going to talk about right now, is how do we grab attention in those first 3 seconds that get people to say, I want to see what this is about. I want to consume more of this content. I want to learn what they have to say. But then it's holding attention, because, you know, attention without any substance to it doesn't really extract any value. And then the third is the monetization.
Ice bucket challenge.
Yeah. And then the third is the monetization level. It's like, what is the business strategy behind it? So when we think about grabbing attention, it's, we have to ensure that we're positioning this in a way that first and foremost is easy to understand, sets a clear expectation in those first few seconds, doesn't overwhelm them, doesn't confuse them, doesn't make them think too hard, because the minute any of those things happen, subconsciously what happens, we start getting left behind and then we're just moving on to the next thing. The other big important factor as it pertains to the new world that we live in is taking a generalist approach to your content, meaning you want to make your content interesting to anybody, even if they have no interest in your subject matter, without diluting the core audience that you're speaking to.
That sounds like a tall order.
It is. It's yeah. It's very simple in concept, but not easy to pull off.
I'd love to hear how you do that. How do you do that? Because we're in apartments. People are daunted by investing in multifamily and syndications and raising money.
It's a snoozer for sure. It's like, how do you make this sexy, right? Yeah. Or generally appealing to the masses, right? Like, I think to your point.
So I'll give you an example and then we can talk about that specifically. So an example is there's a luxury real estate agent named Ryan Serhant. And he represents properties that are 10 all the way up to $250 million in Manhattan, New York. So that's a very niche audience that he's talking to. He needs ultra wealthy people.
It's sexy to everybody, though. Like, we know Ryan. He's been to our events and stuff. Yeah, I've seen his content where it's like, I think everyone aspires to look at that stuff because it's just sexy, right? He does really good.
But let's break down why it works, because he's not the only person selling luxury properties.
Fair.
Yet he built a massive brand on social media doing it. So what makes him successful is he plays to the generalist principle. He creates a YouTube video. Let me take you on a tour of a $7 million closet. Let me take you on a tour of a $250 million ranch. So what he's playing to is anybody would want to see that content. So thus the algorithms that control reach and distribution of content, they only care about one thing and one thing only. That's retention. Mm-hmm. Meaning the longer people spend on these platforms, the more ads they serve. So then when they see Ryan's content, that anybody is clicking on it and is watching a vast majority of it, they're going to say, we want to see this to more people, because it's the fuel that runs our platforms. It's keeping people
Give
engaged.
Us some more. Yeah, yeah.
So, but what he's doing is he'll generate millions of views on this video. And if only 1% is his core target, he's winning. So in your case, it's...
Condo porn. That's what he's doing, Gino. It's not house porn. It's condo porn, right?
But also, again, it's even though those are great hooks, if you watch the content, he's a great storyteller.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Yeah, he's really good.
So it's, again, people will look at it on the surface level and say that, well, he's just doing that. And
I didn't mean that. I just meant the properties he's showing are absolutely stunning and beautiful. I think so. There's a mass appeal there. He's done a good way of distribution and packaging them for sure. Yeah.
But the reality is there is any real estate agent can do that.
Yeah.
Like there's another guy, I think his name is Ennis, who actually outperforms Ryan Serhant doing the same format.
I don't know him. No shit.
And he now gets paid to go out, and these aren't properties he's representing, but he gets paid a good fee to go out to create these videos of properties, luxury real estate properties for the real estate.
Oh, they like his packaging and his framework. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Brendan, how does that work for us though? Like in the multifamily space or anybody who's in a difficult market, like being a chiropractor, like, I mean, that's actually pretty cool. You see people doing stuff on Instagram.
I see this guy, like, I feel like I'm being a pervert right now, but I see this one chiropractor out there. That's Dr.
Mike, bro.
Beautiful, he's taking really beautiful women and like doing like these.
But there's another, like, I actually, it's funny you bring that up because I watch some of the chiropractor videos. Yeah. Like, I don't know why.
Of course
I do know why, but it's not with beautiful women. It's just with, there's this one guy based, I think he's based out of Dubai, and he'll do it on an airplane with like a person he meets or in a mall or that's things smart. Like that with the average person. And he's using a lot of times another format that we call man on the street, where you approach somebody on the street and you engage with them in some way. So again, to kind of your point is like, what is the hook there is, well, what is the opportunity with what you do? And you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of the opportunity is wealth generation, is how do you make money? Like there is another guy named Robert Croak who's got 1 million followers on TikTok, and he just is these walking listicles. Well, he'll walk around the block, speak to his iPhone, and he's teaching people like one of the hooks he uses, do you want to be the first millionaire in your family? And then once he has the hook, then he can direct them to the information that he wants. So it's like, how are you setting up your expertise in a way that allows you to take them on a journey? Like another example is there's a YouTuber, Graham Stephan, that teaches finance to millennials. Finance is not a sexy subject, and teaching it to millennials is a difficult task. So one of his most viewed videos is how I bought a Tesla for $78 a month. So in that video, anybody's interested to see how he achieves this. But through that, he teaches the principles of financing a car. Now, if the title of that video was, you know, 5 tips for financing a car, it would have gotten 10,000 views instead of 10 million views.
Yeah.
So it's really, again, it's taking a step back. It seems difficult. I'm not saying that it's not easy. You just got to reframe how you're thinking about it. Like one exercise is like, you know, how could I make this video interesting to my mother, you know, or to a grandparent or somebody that has no interest in it. And then again, once you have their interest and get them to tune in, then you can deliver the real information. But it's really setting it up in such a way that fascinates the person to say, I want to learn more about what this person's going to say.
Wow, that's...
It's really insightful. I think it's a great way to chunk it down, because there's a lot of... I think it's for special, like... you know, people that are struggling out there. It's this wild jungle of uncertainty, and they try a little bit. They don't have a framework. They don't have direction. They try to post some stuff. They don't get much success, and they just quit. I think that's probably the story of millions, I would say.
Well, you hit it right on the head. There's no framework. There's no system. Yeah. The blessing and the curse of social media is anybody can pull out a phone, push record, and post something. That's a blessing, because it gives us this tool at our fingertips that anybody can do. The curse is it's so easy that there's really no thought that's put into it. Versus like, I went to film school, you spend years dissecting the best filmmakers, the best scripts, learning all the elements that go into making a movie. It's the same thing with social media. It's like we started talking about a format. If you first just understand there's a format, that is putting you ahead of 99% of other people out there that are creating content. Now you can say, oh, I understand there's a format. Let me start looking for the format that matches me. And then taking the next step of saying, okay, what are the elements that contribute to the successful use of this format versus the unsuccessful use of it? But you hit it right on the head. Most people don't have a system. They don't have a process. They are just throwing stuff at the wall. They don't see the progress. They don't understand why something doesn't work. Or in some cases, maybe they get one thing to work, but they can't reproduce it. So they get frustrated, they get burned out, and then they quit.
Well, I think that awareness and identification that you need a framework and a system is the first step, because the people that are good at social media or at this, they appear that they're casual and they're talking to you just like you'd be talking to somebody at a pub or something, right? So it seems effortless and comfortable, but that's actually the skill and the talent that probably there's a lack or a missing connection there, because it seems effortless, like the person's just having a conversation like we are right now. And they think, oh, I can do this and pick it up. Meanwhile, there's a lot more that goes into it to get to that point where that video is actually comfortable to, you know, take in.
100%. It's like all of us have probably watched hundreds of movies. We sit down and we think it's effortless in terms of the story that we're engaging.
And that's the skill.
But could any of us just pick up a camera and just make a movie?
Yeah.
Go and try and see what the result is.
Yeah.
Jake, if we're being honest with ourselves, we fall into that. We always think that we have to be super niched and talk just about multifamily. And now we're trying to come out with the baby money soldiers concept and trying to go wider with personal finance. But we were always scared about going too wide because it's not really our audience, but it really is our audience. So that's the first thing that we're going to start doing, is actually start implementing that. I think anyone listening to this, don't be afraid to go wide, because we always said, hey, you got to stay narrow. You got to stay in the multifamily. We can hit so many different genres of real estate as well. And I think that's one of the things that we've done wrong. I don't know if you want to comment on that, Jake, or punch me in the face, tell me I'm crazy.
Well, it's like that inch deep and a mile wide thing or whatever, right? Versus whatever. There's like an old saying about that. But no, I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah. Hurts.
And those tactics or those teachings were designed pre-social media. Mm-hmm. And kind of the way that I look at it is, would you rather be niching down with your content and your message and generating 1,000 views a video, and of those 1,000 people, it's 90% that are your core target audience, or would you rather have 1,000,000 people and it be 20% of your core target audience?
Damn, you're absolutely right. I totally 100% agree with that.
Yeah, the math isn't even close. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're getting more reach, you're getting more views, you're getting more followers, and then all of a sudden you're getting more awareness, and then things start growing and snowballing.
And who knows what else you gain from that additional awareness and attraction, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I just want to specifically say, I'm not talking about doing prank videos or
killer videos. Yes, we understand. No, we're very clear on what you're saying. Yeah.
Aligned with your brand.
This is not just to do, you dunk you in a tank to get people to watch nonsense. This is is creating a comfortable environment that anyone can consume, that's also in your niche, but it's more appealing where your mom or anyone could watch it, and you're still delivering your message, which is the skill.
Jake, that's why the book is critical. I mean, I'm holding it up for the YouTubers, because he talks about it. Don't create an amazing hook for clickbait, and then all of a sudden you don't deliver on the message, because that's the surefire way to create a crappy brand and not to really do anything. So don't do that. He's got that in the book. Amazing content in this book. Before we go to the short answers though, Brendan, I really want you to touch on brand, because I love when you say when brands go wrong, they're mixing two different objectives. I like that. I understand that. And you talk about storytelling and brand building. Can you touch on brand and how important it is in conjunction with creating hook points and really the messaging?
Yeah. One of the things to think about is nobody logs onto social media and says, I want to see a great branded piece of content. What they want is story. They want to be engaged with your content. So one of the biggest mistakes that people make, and they're making it because it's a creative model that was designed pre-social media, is they're letting their brand guidelines dictate the videos and the ideas that they come up with. Versus what we're talking about is, let's do the research. Let's identify a content format. Let's find the format that works for us. Understand what drives performance of that format. Master that format. And then once we've mastered it, figure out how to layer in brand. But the reality is, creating great stories on social media is to get people to know, like, and trust you. If they know, like, and trust you, they will take that next step with you. Mm-hmm. It's not how fancy of a logo you have, or the color palettes or things of that nature. Now, I'm not saying those don't play a role, especially as you really start
to
scale.
That's a confirmation at the end of the line, if you end up doing business, that you're not a joke or like some kind of fly by night thing, right? That's like the bare minimum that you need to have just to transact, I feel like.
Yeah, those things are important. They shouldn't control your decisions of how you tell your stories in social media. Yeah. And that's kind of the delineation. Again, as we said, we don't want you to do pet videos if you do have nothing to do with pets. But it's just like the minute your brand elements, the minute your branding expert or your brand guidelines are dictating your creative decisions on social media, it's a recipe for underperformance.
Mm-hmm. Jake, before we go to the break, I just want to mention a couple of quotes that he has in the book about it. I love these. Hook point activates a brand by getting people to pay attention to their products. And he says, don't make the brand the hero of the story. I love that. Your brand is not the hero of your story, just like Red Bull. Red Bull makes the athletes the heroes. It's not that Red Bull is the hero or the brand's the hero. It's the story
itself.
Yeah,
they're the juice. Hero. They're the fuel for the hero. Yeah,
I love that. I loved all the content in the book about branding as well.
Awesome. All right, guys, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Now, we have had a great run in multifamily, going from zero units to over $250 million in assets. That's over 2,000 apartment deals that we've been able to purchase through our framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right.
Now, Jake and I, we created the Jake and Gino community back in 2015. We launched our first book, Build Our Profits. And since then, our students have closed over 60,000 units. That's over $4 billion in assets they've been able to close over the last 6 years.
And that's why this community has been so successful. We call it results-based education, and we pour back into the community everything that we've learned on our journey from zero to 2,000 units and all our systems and scale that we use on our very own property management and investing companies.
Jake, I love that. It's not just education, it's implementation. So what I want you to do, click on that link down below, apply to work with our team, see how we can help you on your journey. Multifamily.
All right, we are back, and I just want to point out one thing. When you were talking about story formats, and when you start to identify these, you'll see them more often. I really relate that to when you buy the red Honda or whatever, you see it down the road all the time. I'm sure that's the same thing that will happen. But my question here is, how many story formats do you see on a regular basis that are typical and used quite a bit? Is it 5? Is it 10? What do you think roughly?
I mean, we've done analysis, I think, on 140 different formats. Wow. But you'll see, like, I'll give
the
you
the most
an
common. Yeah.
Well, I don't know that I hesitate to say most common, because what that's going to lead the person that's listening to this is going to be like, because it's the most common, it's the one that I should do.
Yeah.
And that's just not the case, but.
Well, because it may not suit them at all, right? It's like you're fitting the wrong tool for the job.
There's also
variations
of formats. Like one that is very successful, that's low cost, ease of use, is man on the street. You approach a random stranger on the street, you engage with them. We've done analysis on like 9 different versions of it. So I have a friend that has hit 20 million followers on TikTok. He's a photographer. He approaches a random stranger on the street and he offers them a professional photo shoot, and it takes you on the journey of that photo shoot. There's
a guy that asks
one,
like, what's your job or how'd you make get this car or whatever. I've seen that guy's huge.
Yeah, Noah Kagan has done that very successfully, where he appears to knock on wealthy people's doors.
But it's all set up, right?
I can't definitively tell you in his case, but I can definitively tell you, you can stage it. You can go and knock on random neighbors' doors.
He's a nice guy, Gino.
But you can stage it. But he knocks on people's doors and asks them, how did you make your first $1 million? Like, that's a version. There's Noah has done that really well on YouTube. There's a Instagram account called The School of Hard Knocks. Again, he's interviewing people on the street about what's made them successful. But again, I want to point out, man on the street on the surface looks very simple, but I'm telling you, 99% of the people that will look at that format won't do the research, and they will fail with performance on it. So again, even when you see a Noah Kagan or a School of Hard Knocks having a lot of success with it, you got to take it to the next level. You have to go and look at, in that specific channel, what's the difference between a high performer and a low performer? And don't look at it from a content perspective. Look at it from a context perspective of what's really driving that.
I'm not attempting to promote any one of these types of formats or simplify them and say, guys, you can just go out and pick this one up and do it. I'm simply at like a level 1 out of 10, if we're being honest, and just trying to grow my awareness and education and
I'm not, yeah, not, and Jake, I'm not saying that you're doing that. Yeah. I just want to
you're
be
just cautioning folks, right?
Yes, because this is a lot of people, especially other social media experts in the space, will kind of just point to those things and say, man on the street is successful, go and do it. Without doing the deep qualitative analysis of understanding what drives success. It's like if like a director was coming out of film school and there was 5 of the last 7 movies that were most successful were horror movies, and you say, oh, just go do a horror movie and you'll be successful. Well, that's just setting yourself up for failure, because it's just like you need to understand what makes a successful use of it. But in terms of your question, like ease of use is Man on the Street is very easy. In terms of production, like you typically, there's 2 different types of kind of interaction of Man on the Street. There's one where it's kind of faceless, where you are just holding the camera and going up to somebody. You hear the person's voice, but you're really focused on the other person. There's another Man on the Street version where there's a camera person going along with you and recording the interaction with it. As I mentioned, this guy, Robert Croke, does walking listicles, where he's just filming himself, talking into the camera, walking around the block, and giving information.
Variations within the greater framework. And the reason I'm so engaged and fascinated by this is because we built our real estate investing business off of frameworks, and then frameworks within a frameworks. Our general investing business is based around buy right, manage right, and finance right. And then under each one of those, there's frameworks in how to do it. And the parallels that I'm seeing, and it's just how we've run our business, is that there's frameworks for storytelling. Like we have our framework for multifamily investing. But then what I'm guessing, once you select one of these frameworks, there's additional storytelling frameworks to make that successful and research to do as you begin to chunk it down. So I'm just seeing all these parallels, and it's interesting to me. That's where my questions generally are derived from here.
And that's exactly, we spent the past like 4 years investing millions of dollars to develop a framework so that you can have a system in place to understand what drives success, what detracts from success, and give you a clear blueprint so that if you're following that blueprint and you produce content that doesn't work, it accounts for that. Because that's one of the biggest issues is most people, when they're trying to break through, they just keep analyzing their own content. And it's like you get stuck in this hamster wheel. Like, it's like in your business, if you guys just started out and never learned from other experts in the space, you would never kind of grow. You would never master it. So the framework accounts for that if something doesn't work, there's a clear system of how to find the answers of what caused it not to work so that you can refine it for the next one and the next one.
Yeah. And not to go too far, you know, because I don't think there's any such thing as giving away the farm here, right? Because there's so much work to be done. And once you identify it, in my opinion, if you're going to go this route, just call Brennan, because you're going to waste your time and there's going to be so many hours burned trying to figure this out when he's already done the work, that just work with someone that's already done it, shorten your learning curve and get it done right without burning out. With that being said, where do you start? Is it even maybe talk about your framework. Is it identifying a suitable framework for you based on your industry and attributes, or is there something else missing there in the beginning?
Yeah, the first part is the research phase. So it's identifying the format that works for you. I would say that oftentimes people just want to look at their competition, but their competition is not doing well. Even if your competition,
they're going to copy someone that's basically a loser and then get similar results.
Yes. And I want to say that there's even if like your competition has 100,000 followers, or maybe you have a competition that has 1 million followers, but they're generating like 5,000 views a video. That's probably not a good benchmark for you because they haven't consistently broken through. So
again, but they've broken through to you, so you're just doing more of the same garbage. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the big things that, and I've said this before, is it's not about the content, it's about the context. So you can look at people in different industries in terms of their format And if you look beyond the content, you can see the framework and how it can be applied to you. And that's one of the big parts of research is people, as they start this process, they just get so caught up in looking at an apples to apples comparison to the type of message that they want to convey, instead of looking at the format and structure of how it can be applied to them and making it work for their subject matter or expertise.
I'll say, I absolutely love your approach because it's literally parallel to how we operate in our business and probably all the things that we've done wrong when attempting to utilize social media. So very eye-opening. Appreciate that today. Best way for folks to get a hold of you if they want to engage and interact with your company?
Yeah, they can go to hookpoint.com to learn more. They can also, if they want, there's a, we have, if they go to guidetogoingviral.com, there's a free kind of 50-page PDF that breaks down our process that we've kind of talked about today so that they can kind of have a resource to look at as they're listening to this or to reflect on after listening to this.
Gino, this is a tall order for you right now. This is very, you know, just generally business-oriented, you know, much about just the operations here. So good luck bringing this home, but I'm going to turn it over to you.
Well, Jake, you didn't give me a chance to get to know Brendan.
And now it's my fault.
Right, on a personal level, you snowplowed the guy. You start talking about Taylor Swift and getting into the business aspect of it. When I want to connect with Brendan, I want to learn his story. I want to learn his origin story, and you didn't give me a chance to do that. But I read the
Sorry,
book.
Gino.
I know you're killing me, but I love the idea that he actually went into film school. And for those of you out there that think you're creative and you can't use frameworks, that's just a limiting belief. I think if you follow the process, you put in the hard work, you do the research.
Put a foundation down, yeah.
And you're willing to say to yourself, yeah, I'm not doing great right now. What do I need to do? How do I need to create that hook point? And how do I want to create my brand? Because I wanted to mention the David versus Goliath. We're a lot of Davids out there, and there's a lot of Goliaths out there that have these massive followings. Well, how do you cut through, and how are you able to actually go against the Goliath? It's by picking up hook point, by starting the journey, by looking at others, and by trying to, I guess, follow Brendan's framework on how to create amazing, engaging content. And don't do what Jake and Gino did by making that excuse of saying, oh, we're in multifamily. We're not going to really look at anybody else. And oh, Ryan Serhant, he's single family. He's got sexy houses. That's why he's doing good. Jake and Gino are playing small. We don't have that growth mindset when we come up with those excuses. And I hope you're not making those excuses as well, because once you read Hook Point, you're like, wow, I didn't know that. So it's incumbent upon you to read the book, to start implementing what he's talking about and really start looking at brand and messaging at a different level.
Well, you know, I didn't have much confidence in you today, but you pulled it home. Well done, sir.
So, thanks, brother.
Gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time. Thanks, Brennan.
Take care.